You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for June 20th, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life that you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can ask your questions and share comments there as well, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by recapping last week's weekly tittle, which was called Volume Control. The assignment was to evaluate current set point for one category of stuff in your life. We'd love to hear from our participants live in Zoom and on Facebook. Who adjusted the volume knob on some of your clutter this week? Please let us know in the comments. Ginger shared this comment on YouTube. Ginger's a frequent contributor who's really successfully established set points for a lot of her stuff already. Ginger says, I've been working and updating my whole house inventory. The questions I ask are, how much is enough? And where does this need to be stored for best convenience of use? I revisit the categories and subcategories each year and find that as circumstances change, the amount we need changes. Mm-hmm. My mother passed away after living with us for many years. We no longer need two sets of sheets and mattress pads for a queen-size bed. And we need fewer coffee cups. She went through several every day. And family members gave her coffee cups, so there are a good number here.
Thanks, Ginger, for your response. I'm so sorry for the loss of your mother. I think it's great that you already recognize that the set points for what you need in the house have changed now, that there are two people and their preferences in the house instead of the three. What was needed to support your mother is now unnecessary, and your levels of stuff can settle down to a lower level to reflect a new headcount in your house. And this would be true if a child leaves home, your job might change, the ever present you moving to a smaller place, like we all at some point go, oh God, I have to move to a smaller place. And that change also adjusts the set point of what you need in the house. So thank you for example. I really appreciate that. And I love the coffee cup metaphor is one that everybody can relate to, I'm sure. There's a lot of us that have too many coffee cups and then we have to like dial it down. And so coffee cups getting stored in the house, you know, they take up some space, and adjusting that volume to how many coffee cups you actually need and which ones are your favorite and letting the rest go is a perfect exercise in changing the set point of something that we all somehow want to retain, even though we can't possibly store 80 coffee cups in the house. So good example. And thank you.
We're saving them for that day when all of our friends stop by for coffee at the same time.
Simultaneously.
Right.
True.
No tittle reports from our live audience yet, but Janet says, I have 4 large bags for Vietnam veterans to pick up Friday. Rejoice missed the meeting and says she needs to go back and watch it. So we'll have a late tittle report from Joyce after
okay.
She watches. Paula says, I want to encourage everyone that small steps really do add up. This week, I cleaned out enough items from dresser drawer A that I was able to consolidate items from drawers A and B into drawer A. Then I moved items from closet C into drawer B. That made enough room available in the closet to move a shelving unit, small bookcase size, from room D into closet C. The eyesore in room D is now gone. Hope this makes sense.
It does. And how great of you to figure out that each of those small steps changed your landscape in a way that was more useful to you. So good job on that. And the idea that, I mean, you recognize the pattern that you needed to do in order to get the bookshelf into the closet, which I think was your ultimate goal. I mean, at some point you were like, I want this to be in the closet. I want to use it here. And in order to do that, I have to do this. And then, which means I got to do that, which means I got to do that. And you went and started that chain to make it happen. And here's your end result. And I suspect that you didn't do it all in one sitting, which is part of how you were talking about it, that, you know, small steps add up and you don't have to, you can do clear drawer A today and merge B and A the next day and move things from the closet C the third day and move the bookcase for D on the fourth day. And so those were all stages of the process that you ultimately were trying to accomplish. And you were able to step your way through them and break it up so that it was not completely overwhelming. So good job. That was a very good shuffle that you did there.
M says, I started a pile of unneeded books. We know how hard that is for a book lover.
Right?
We feel your pain. It's hard to admit that you don't need a book.
That's true.
You're a book lover.
It's true. And you know, we have to remind you that there are books in the library. You are not going to be cut off from the book forever. And right. It's still available. So you just, other people have shifted their thoughts to, instead of their keeping their book collection at home, they talk about keeping their book collection at the library. So right. If you can just think of it that way, you're sending the book on, but that book is out there in the library somewhere. And library in air quotes, so you can define whatever library means at that point. But there will always be more books for you to play with. The books are not going away. We all love them too much. So you don't have to own them all. You can just think of the world as your library, that you will be able to go and find another book out there somewhere that you want to play with.
Oh, hey, big news for Houston area readers this week. If you're in the Houston area, if you live in Harris County specifically,
right?
There is a Harris County Public Library, and any resident of Harris County can join it. And they have a good ebook collection that frequently contains things that Houston Public Library doesn't have. So it's kind of nice to have both memberships when you're looking for ebooks. And the news this week was that Harris County Public Library has now partnered with the Bryan College Station Library for their digital collection and ebook loans. So that's pretty cool. You can use your Harris County Library card to check out ebooks from the Bryan College Station Library.
Right, which means, and that library is probably a library that's supporting the classes that are happening at Texas A&M. So there's probably a lot of material in there that might not be in a library in Houston. So that should be fascinating. That's a great possibility of new things to read, new gems to find, and not bring the book home, but borrow it digitally from Bryan College Station Library.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. That's a good update.
Nan reports removing old phone cases and clutter related to hair ties.
What is it about hair ties? I was just this Sunday working in a collection of hair ties, and I guess it's one of those things that they're inexpensive. And so we buy them because they're cheap. And then you end up with 500 hair ties. And then I have to devise a way to manage 500 hair ties, which you're never going to actually put in all of those 500 in your hair. So I'm not sure how having more than 10 or 15 is even remotely useful. But yeah, hair ties, man, they're one of those things that multiplies like shoes. And books.
Samudra says, I'm a container freak. I've been working on getting the important stuff into appropriate containers.
That's nice a good work. One, right? That's a very good one. And sometimes that container thing is like having it be the best size for the stuff and having it be, having the container be accessible and easy for you to move around and get into or out, put things in or take things out of. super important. Makes your life easier.
CJ reports, just this morning, we hauled away a carport full of construction debris, one full parking spot restored.
Yay!
Victory!
Oh, that's a good one, man. That is a really good one, because I bet it has been bugging you to death all this time that it completely covered up a parking space. So good job. I know that was a to-do list item that required intervention and handyman and rental and whatever. It was, you know, it was a project to get that stuff taken away. And so good job for doing the steps to arrange it and make it happen. And now you can go stand in your clear parking space and do a twirl and be proud of yourselves. Good job.
Leela had this comment to share about Paula's report on taking it a drawer at a time.
Mm.
Leela says, my family can't seem to understand that. I will ask about an item if they still want or need it, and they will say, that's so small, what does it matter if we keep it? But I've seen that every tiny item decluttered makes a difference and eventually leads to an empty drawer or container or shelf.
Mm-hmm. It totally does. And it's not uncommon for us to think, oh, we'll just throw this extra thing in the drawer. It's not a big deal. But once you've done that 35 times, then you have 35 small things that create a mass that is difficult to manage. And so just like one more pair of shoes or one more book isn't going to break the bookshelf, except when you do that, you know, 50 times, then you are going to break the bookshelf. So yeah, those little items do add up quickly. And it's a great idea to recognize, yeah, I just need to let this one thing go. Not the least of which is because if you can let it go in those small increments, it's less distressing for you. It's easier to let one pin go than it is to let 50 pins go in one sitting. It's less of a, it feels like less of a decision that is so monumental and important if you get rid of little bits at a time. And so it doesn't feel like it's going to have such a huge and debilitating impact on you when you give it out in little dribs and drabs like that. And so good job figuring that out. Proud of you.
And Leela's family are making her the
bad guy,
the keeper of the deferred decisions.
Yeah, you know,
They don't want to make a decision right now. And so
yeah,
that's adding one more deferred decision, one more item that will need to be dealt with again later.
Yeah. And it's, you know, either they don't want to participate. They don't want to be responsible for making a decision. They find her asking for a decision or asking for participation annoying. And so they're deflecting her away from them by saying, yeah, it doesn't matter. Just keep it, which is shortcut for don't make me think about it. And for whatever reason, they don't want to think about it. Clearly, she's the one that's having to be the clutter police in the house. And, you know, that's a burden. It takes a lot of energy, as we all know well, right? Like, that's why we're here, that managing this stuff takes a lot of energy and focus. And we might want to enroll the family in being more supportive around that. So you don't have to be the clutter bad guy all the time.
Okay, one more comment, and then we'll get on with our main topic. Rejoice, who in an earlier comment mentioned that she's the caregiver for one of her brothers, and he's recently moved for the first time in 20 years. She said, my brother's caregivers had not dealt with any of his clothes, most of which no longer fit. 8 township-sized garbage bags full of clothes moved with him. Guess what I did all last Tuesday? Relived PTSD from cleaning out my dad's townhome 8 years ago.
Aww.
Donated 6 bags of clothes to Goodwill on my way home that evening.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of work. I'm so sorry. And I'm sure that the caregivers are uncomfortable making decisions for the family because they don't want to get, they're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place, right? Like, they don't want to make a decision and then get called out for having done so later. If somebody feels like, oh, you shouldn't have given away those pants or whatever. So they're just trying to make sure that they don't make you irritated, but then it means that you have to do all the work yourself again. And I'm sure that was a big project. Absolutely. And good job. And that you hung in there, made it happen and got them delivered and out of there. And you know that while he's still alive, you're doing this means that you won't be doing it in a from a position of grief and loss later. When your brother passes away, it won't be as big of a deal. It won't be as much of a burden to go through all his stuff because you've done some of it now. And so good for you. And good for you for being a good sister and taking care of your brother.
She also said, still have CDs and books, but those are not stressing me out as much.
There you go. Well, and if you face the thing that stressed you out the most and got it handled, then whoosh, you must feel a huge relief. There's nothing like, here, take all these away from me, and offloading them and then going home with an empty car to make you feel like you accomplished something that day. So good on you. Good for taking care of the thing that was the most irritating or distressing to you.
It's painful.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll come back for more comments, but let's get on to our main topic.
Okay.
The way we talk about our stuff is a clue to the undercurrent of feelings and experiences that influence our choices. Words like useful, mess, and shame are loaded with history, meaning, and judgment for each of us, and they can contain the power to keep us stuck or help us move forward. Today, we're going to examine words we use to describe our clutter and suggest how to reframe language for a clearer insight into our stuff and our lives.
Ed is right. The way we talk about our stuff is a clue to the feelings we're having and experiences we have had related to clutter. Those hidden feelings and past difficult experiences influence the way we face and tackle the clutter in our lives. A lot of the feelings and experiences are in response to outside influences, others besides ourselves. Maybe it's shame you feel as you speculate what your mom would say right now, or your spouse is asking for the umpteenth time why you just can't clear it up. Those inner dialogues can shut you down quickly and stall out your ability to marshal any resources you actually have. Since there are so many ways that we've internalized negative messages from others and we've been wounded by our life experiences, I believe it's very important that we manage our thoughts, notice when we're not supporting ourselves, and try to change the dialogue to something more positive. I know positive thoughts doesn't make it all better, in air quotes, but reframing things for yourself to a positive message instead of a negative one is one way to provide yourself self-care, especially when you're not hearing a positive thought from others, the people that you're living with, the people that you're conversing with, the people around you. I watch this happen every day as I work with clients. When they shyly ask me if they're not the worst hoarders I've ever seen. When they say, I'm a mess, or I'm a failure. When they talk about feeling ashamed of their situation. My heart goes out to them in that moment because I can tell how defeated they feel before we've even started the work. I swear half of my job is just reminding clients that those beliefs that they have about themselves aren't real. They're just thoughts that they can discard for something better. And then I try to show them the truth instead. They can learn to face those piles. They can get control of their rooms. They can use whatever they have to hand and whatever capacity they have to make improvements in their space and in their lives. With that thought in mind, we're doing the power of words round two to cover some new words, ones that need to be reframed, and ones that can be a better substitute for something negative hanging around in your head. So let's start with the first word, which is peace. That's a good place to start, right? Peace is the state that you're trying to achieve in your mind and in your home. We all want to come home to a peaceful environment because that's where rejuvenation and recovery happen. Instead of, my home is a mess, you can substitute, I want to live in a peaceful space. I'm in a mess, reinforces a feeling of low self-esteem, and the other, living in a peaceful space, gives you a positive goal to focus on. The first is totally demotivating, and the second is more enticing to action. When you say to yourself, my home is a mess, that does not encourage you to get going. But I want to live in a peaceful space is a forward-thinking thought that lets you think about where you're trying to go and a positive place that you want to arrive at. And it's a little bit more like, yes, I want that. I want to live in that peaceful space. And therefore, I need to get into action. It supports you in getting into action. And notice here that I didn't say my house is a show place. This is not HGTV. And a peaceful space is only about how you feel when you're in it, whatever that looks like to you. So the level of completion in organizing your space is defined by when you feel peaceful and nothing else. Next word is disorganized. Can't believe we didn't cover that last time. That's a pretty obvious one, right? I often hear I'm a disorganized person from clients. That sounds like a claim of identity, like you're planting your flag on disorganized island and claiming to own it. You may struggle with organizing tasks. I can accept that point, but you don't have to wear that badge as a scarlet letter. Why not push it off on the stuff instead? My stuff is disorganized. Is a status about your stuff, not an identity of you. My stuff is disorganized implies a project to be done, just like my fridge needs to be cleaned out or my laundry needs washing. That seems less about your failure as a person and more about the task list that you need to get done. So it's a better point of view to come from, a more supportive one. What about the word control? This can be a thought about having lost control, or it can be a thought about you're wanting to achieve control. If you find yourself thinking, I've lost control of the house, then you can notice that and add, but I'll get it under control again soon. I just need to do some work on it. Control is a state of being where we feel like we have a handle on everything that's happening and we can manage it successfully. And as you would expect, this is a fluid state of being. And we've all had times when we felt we were in control of everything. And we've also had times when we felt like we were in a hurricane instead. So if you're feeling out of control, I would suggest that you remember a time when you felt in control. Remind yourself that it's happened before and it can happen again. You can reclaim control with some work on your part. Just remind yourself that it's possible, even if you can't see it right now.
I think it's also important to recognize that a lot of control is a pipe dream. You know, there's always, you're only going to have a certain level of control. You're never going to have it all
right
exactly under control. Cause the minute, if you reach that, then the universe will instantly throw some chaos your way. Right.
True that. Well, and you know, it's sort of like the idea of I clean the house up and then it, and then everybody don't move because yeah. I don't want the house to get dirty. Like, yeah, you have control for a minute, but it is a constantly moving target. Right. And so the idea that you're going to maintain control when there are other people in the world, when there's other agendas in the world, when there's other things going on, you know, you can manage your response around stuff way more than you can have control over everything all the time. So very good point. Thank you, Ed.
Another important point on control is you mostly can only control your reaction, your response, your efforts. And so if you share your space with someone else, control is
more elusive.
Probably too much to hope for. What you want is cooperation and some buy-in.
Coordinated, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? You want everybody to be pulling towards the same goal.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And depending on who you're living with and where they're coming from and what's going on in their life, you may be in a moment of the fluid nature of control may be working in your favor today, while the person that you're living with is not in that same place. And they're having a moment of, you know, loss of control and chaos.
Super randomness.
Right. So recognizing that that's going to be true for you and everybody that's in your household is an important point to make, because when you are in the zone and it's all working, that doesn't mean that your partner's in the zone or your kids are in the zone. And so there may be some other stuff going on that you don't have any control over at all. And that's an important point. We all have to, pull together and accept our level of control, whatever it is in that moment, in that day. Okay. So the next word is that I picked was hoarder. And I did that because it had come up a few times this week. And so it reminded me that we needed to talk about it. This is a word that we throw around so easily now. The fact that those shows happened and everybody has hoarders on A&E and the other hoarding shows that have happened. We all kind of casually describe ourselves that way, but it's always a way that they're describing themselves to put themselves down. It's always a put down. Their clients are always telling me the negative judgment they feel about themselves. Even if they're joking, they're putting themselves down with a joke. If it wasn't a total put down, I wouldn't worry about it. But I've never heard anyone describe themselves as a hoarder and mean it as a positive thing. The word reflects an actual clinical diagnosis for people who have the mental illness of hoarding disorder, according to DSM-5. And I would suggest that those who can be diagnosed with hoarding disorder are the ones who need the label for their own mental health treatment process. The rest of us are just using the term hoarder to put ourselves down. And we shouldn't cheapen the diagnosis for those who are truly suffering from that mental illness by throwing it around casually as self-punishment. So if you find that you're calling yourself a hoarder, stop that thought and try, I've lost control of the house currently, but I'll get it under control again soon, like we discussed earlier. Don't make a joke at your own expense. Don't use a word that everyone listening knows has a negative connotation. And if you have that diagnosis, then that means that you're struggling with a real issue that requires real treatment. And we hope that you have that treatment available to you. And otherwise, those of us who are just casually, slapping ourselves in the face by calling ourselves hoarder, we should think about not doing that and come up with something that's more positive and supportive instead.
Tammy offered a nice reframe. She said, I have hoarding tendencies, but I am not a true hoarder.
So if you could say to me as a client, I have hoarding tendencies, that sounds like a factual report to me. That doesn't sound like a judgment. So I like that reframe. I think it's very helpful because you're basically describing, I have this issue, not I am this person.
Yeah.
And I think that's a much better point of view. And it gives me useful information to know that what you're saying to me is you struggle with letting things go, that you find that decision-making process hard, that you're inclined to keep more than you need, and you're inclined to do that beyond what will fit in the house, or you're inclined to surrender more living space in your house than you need to for storing of items. And so that's useful information for me to know when I'm working with someone who is saying that to me, then I know how I need to approach. I need to be more careful when we're going through the decision-making process. I need to notice when the person is struggling. I need to help coach people through the decision-making process so that they feel more comfortable about making the decision to let things go and then deciding which of the things to let go, and recognize that that is a more of a struggle than for you than for others. And so I think I have hoarding tendencies is a much better frame. The last person that said it to me, their house had been, we were working in paper files. Their house was interior decorated. It was beautiful. There wasn't a thing out of place anywhere in the house. And we were going through files in the office and getting rid of paper. We were updating her filing system. And it's like, yeah, this is so not, doesn't have nothing to do with hoarding. And why are you even using that term? And she felt embarrassed because she felt like the files were overstuffed or whatever. It's like, okay, you think the files aren't under control, but asking me if you're a hoarder, yeah, really, no. You don't need to be looking for that negative label and adding it to your life. Okay, so the next word is useful. Now, this word, albeit it's a positive adjective to describe an object, can hold you hostage. So you keep things that you really don't need to keep. I hear this from clients as, but this is still useful, meaning you don't want to lose the possibility of using it, even though you aren't using it now and you don't have plans to use it in the near future, the near or the far future, for instance. I've said my standard response to this comment so many times. It might be useful, but it's not useful to you right now. If you think something is useful and you can see you needing it in the next quarter, fine. Like if you can look at it and go, yeah, I'm going to have to bring that thing out in for this holiday, or I'm going to have to use this for this next project I've got coming up. Fine. But otherwise, admit that storing potential usefulness is just hiding it from people who might use it now. It's better to let most of those items that are caught up by you not wanting to let go of something useful, it's better to let most of those go on and let somebody use them instead of just storing that possibility and that potential in your closet against a maybe that will never come. And so I don't want to be hauling stuff away later that if they donated it a decade before would have been useful to somebody, but now has died in your closet and can't be used anymore because you held on to the usefulness until it bled away into the carpet and now it's completely useless. So don't be tricked by that word is one thing I'm saying. Don't be tricked by it. And then, you know, ask yourself, is the fact that it's useful the most important thing here? It may be useful, but if it isn't useful to you and you can't see that it will be useful to you soon, then you need to move it on and let somebody else have it. Support somebody else in the universe using it right now. And when and if that moment comes where it would have been useful for you 3 years from now, then you can go and find somebody else's cast off or go find a current solution for it when that problem does actually arise.
I think too, when you've labeled things as useful or potentially useful, you could take it a step further and also consider what's the likelihood that you will use it. So for example, you bought some wood screws for a project and you used the two you needed, and now you've got the eight that other ones that were in the package. Well, yeah, they're obviously still useful. But what is the likelihood that you'll find a project that they're just the thing for? And how easy will it be for you to retrieve them should such a project come up? Right.
That's a big issue. Like if you're keeping all those potential things as useful, and then I was in a client's house who the pantry was in disarray and she was baking. And so every time she would go to do a baking project, she would go rebuy the sugar or rebuy the flour or rebuy the brown sugar. And so when I went to organize the pantry, there was like 8 containers of sugar that had been open and partially used, because when she needed the sugar, she couldn't find the one that was there. And the shorter, faster way to solve the problem was to go buy more. It's like, well, then sure, the sugar was useful, but you didn't use it. You went and bought more. So it creates an environment where you can't identify and find the things anyway to use them, even though they would be useful. You can't find them. And you end up going buy more anyway. So then if you know that you can't find them and you're going to have to go buy them anyway, then why keep them and just admit that you're going to go buy them later and don't worry about it and let it go.
Samudra shared a point about hoarding, which I want to share before we get too far away from that topic.
Okay.
She said, from what I can tell, she mentioned in an earlier comment that there is often a genetic component.
Yes.
In hoarding. And she says, from what I can tell, under a series of traumas, a person will manifest a specific genetic pattern, but it's not always hoarding. Be glad we don't become serial killers.
Right.
And she says, my reframe is, I have the gene, but mama trained me to keep it at bay. She had experiences with daddy.
There you go. Right. So she gave you some skills, which is wonderful. And it is. There is a genetic component, and sometimes people just start off, they're right off the bat, they start over collecting things, but a lot of times they feel like they're able to control it and manage it until something super traumatic happens. And we all know how disrupting it is when something traumatic happens, when one of your parents passes away, when you get a divorce, when something goes wrong with your kid, and you're having to manage these life events that are big and super overwhelming. And in those moments where our capacity to cope is being stretched to the absolute limit, it's not a surprise to me that people with that tendency anyway default to that as a coping mechanism for being completely stretched beyond their capacity to cope with whatever emotional situation's happening. And so even somebody that's coming from that place can learn some new behaviors. They can learn some new filters. It might be harder. It might be more work for that person than someone else, but they can still learn some mitigating behaviors to help keep their situation under control or help recover their situation after it's gotten out of control. And it would be more of a struggle for someone in that situation, but it's still not impossible. And will they ever live in a Martha Stewart house? No, probably not. But will they be able to get back more functionality in the house, more living space in the house, more ability to live safely and comfortably? Yeah, that can be done. And it's not impossible. And Samudra makes a very valid point about she had somebody to train her to recognize that, yeah, this is an area where you might go overboard, or where left unchecked, you could create a lot of chaos. Let me teach you some coping mechanisms to deal with it. And that is awesome that she spent the time to do that. That's fabulous. And how much better your life is for it. And you can, you know, we can all thank Samudra's mother in heaven. Thank you so much for doing that for your daughter, because I'm sure it made a huge difference in her living situation and her quality of life.
Let me share a couple of comments on the word useful before we move away from that. Charity says it is only useful when I can find it, especially right. if it's going to be needed in an emergency.
Exactly.
So we can't put a useful item in organized inventory that we can keep it, but if we're going to throw it in a tub called house maintenance and forget we have, then no.
And it'll be hard to find.
And Paula shared, one of my siblings is a creative soul who finds almost everything useful, whether in her art or otherwise. Her house is jam-packed.
Yeah, that's the downside of being super creative. It means that you have a better than average capacity to see the possibilities of how something can be used in a more creative way. Like, you can recognize how it's designed to be used, but then you can also see a million other ways that it can be used on top of that. And the average person doesn't always have that those extra pictures, but a creative person can always go, oh yeah, and here's 37 other things you can do with that object. And so it is something that creative people fight against, because they have the gift of possibility, of probability, of capacity. They can always think of another way to use something. And so I have to have that conversation with artists about, yeah, but you can't live or realize all of these potentials. You can't realize all these possibilities. And so you need to keep the possibilities that you can, that you have a chance in hell of making happen. And you need to set some of those other possibilities free for someone else to work on, because they're going to overtake your house and you're never going to get to them all. So you have to get to the ones that really call to you and really excite you and really engage you. And the rest of them have to go on down the river of stuff and recognize that you can't get them all. You can't manifest them all. You can't make them, you can't turn them all from potential into reality in your lifetime. And so picking ones that work, and letting the rest go, that's the way to filter for an art person. Okay, next word, mess. This word is all kinds of judgment. I hear this one most often as I'm a mess, or my life is a mess. I can relate to that feeling for sure. We all feel it at one time or another, but it's not a permanent state of being if you're feeling a bit messy in the moment. So mess is another word like disorganized. You don't need to use it to describe yourself. Use it very deliberately to describe stuff instead. You're not a mess. Your messy stuff is just the project that you need to work on this week. And the last one I'm going to talk about today is shame.
Wait, actually, before you go ahead. I just wanted to mention there's a conversation in the chat about how messy is used in German. And in German, messy means hoarding or hoarder.
Okay.
And Deborah clarified that in English, it just means untidy, typically.
Yeah. And a little, scrambleized.
Yeah.
You know, messy means that it's not ordered. It's not in any kind of an order. It's a little, disheveled is another word I might use.
Yeah.
Okay. Shame. This one always comes out as I'm ashamed. My mom would be ashamed of me. I'm too ashamed to let others see this. I know you guys talked about it when we had a work session in place of the webcast, and many of you share with each other that you're struggling with feeling ashamed. And this is a really crippling feeling for sure. Shame is such a negative motivator, and shame is a wounding emotion too. I don't want to diminish your feelings at all here. Recognize that at least some part of your shame is probably projection. You're assuming what other people are thinking about you. It's something you feel based on how you think others are seeing you. It implies all kinds of judgment coming from others. And to dispel that, focus on good things that you know to be true about yourself. I wish I could wave my Clutter Fairy magic wand to make your shame go away, because shame is such an unproductive emotion. Recognize when you're feeling shame and take a moment for compassionate self-care. Remind yourself that you're making progress and everyone struggles with organization to some extent. And keep coming back here where we remind you that decluttering is a project. It's not a character flaw. We don't think that there's something wrong with you that requires you to feel shameful because you're struggling with your disorganization in your house. It's just a project. And so I can't tell you not to feel shame, although I want to, but I can't tell you that. I recognize that. I just want you to notice when you are feeling ashamed and recognize that it's a point that you can stop and reframe and think about it differently in the moment. Give yourself that self-care to say, I'm feeling ashamed, but I don't have to stay in that place. I can remember that I'm really good at X, Y, and Z, even though I'm not so great at organizing, or I have been able to accomplish A, B, and C because I keep working on this project. And so I can feel good about my progress, my learning, the steps that I've taken, and think on those and focus on those instead of on the feeling of being ashamed. Just displace it for a minute. It may come back. It likely will come back. But every moment that you can displace that feeling of shame with something else that's more positive, you're just being kind to yourself and supporting your own mental health recovery and journey. And making that a priority can only improve your life. It can only make it easier for you to live. It can only make it better for you to keep moving forward. And so I try very hard to tell people when I'm working with them, they don't need to be ashamed. There's nothing wrong here. It's just a project. And we're going to work on it. And I'm going to coach you. And we're going to talk about things that you can learn to do differently. And we can work through until you can let go of shame. And I want to encourage you guys to try to support yourself in that way as well. Okay. Those are the words for today. I hope that you got some changes of thought out of it. And I hope we can look forward to hearing from you later about it.
Naomi says, maximize the usefulness of a useful thing by passing it on to someone who will use it more than you.
Oh, that's a good one. That's very good. You're maximizing the usefulness by passing it on to someone who will use it more than me. That's very good.
Well, and for, my example of the wood screws left over from a project, give them to the woodworker in your family or in your neighborhood.
Right.
Who will put them in a huge jar of the same size and shape and kind and be that much better supplied for his next project.
Right.
His or her, I should say his or her.
Yes.
Naomi also said, even if you later need them, you can ask for them. In the past 6 months or so, I've asked my neighbors and received for free half a dozen plastic bread bags when I started baking my own bread, and about 30 yogurt containers when I needed to transplant a whole lot of cuttings from houseplants.
There you go. You went and got some clutter from somebody else's house and you used them for being that, you know, to accomplish your, you had a project, you needed them right now. You took their usefulness and manifested it by using them to do the plants. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You can be that person and you can pass that stuff on to the next person that needs it right now. And won't that be fabulous? And then you're not living with the jars. She is.
Gabrielle in Hamburg shared, this weekend I spent 2 days at a Messies workshop in Germany.
Oh.
Messies and the Messy movement in Germany are not exactly only hoarders, but also people who have too much and are unorganized.
Right.
Just to clarify what we said earlier.
How cool to go for a conference weekend. That's great. I bet you heard a lot of really interesting things over those 2 days. I bet there's a lot of aha moments in that.
Samudra shared, reason says I should give up my skates. Intuition says keep them as a symbol of hope. And that's fine. You know, we never want to discourage people from keeping things that have meaning to them. Mm-hmm. If it means something to you, ignore all the rest of our advice. If it's important to you, keep it. We're never trying to talk you into getting rid of stuff that you legitimately care about.
That's 100% true. And what you're really saying is they've stopped being skates that I will actually wear, and they have now become a keepsake, an inspiration piece.
Inspiration, yeah.
Right? And so at your age, the likelihood that you're going to get on skates and go skating around the neighborhood is probably, not. Your doctor would probably advise against that, but it can be an inspiration for other kinds of movement that are more safe and appropriate for your age and physical capacity. So I get that you want to look at them and go, yeah, I wish I could skate, but you can compromise and go walking instead, right? To go to dance class instead. Do something that's a little bit easier to manage, because we don't want you to get on the skates to make them to manifest their usefulness and, you know, skate yourself into a sidewalk and, you know, come back with a bruised face. So stay upright, Samudra. Don't get on the skates. But if you're not going to wear them and they're going to be a keepsake, then how you store them changes as well. They can become something that you hang on the wall. They can become something that you put on a bookcase and put on a display piece, because you're looking at them as inspiration and not trying to keep them accessible to put on your actual feet. We want to skip that part. But so it changes how you store them, because you're not going to wear them. You're just going to look at them.
Linda says, you mentioned Martha Stewart House. I realized a while back that before they take those perfect house pictures, there's a crew making it look perfect. But I use that to motivate me to get cleaned up. How do I want the space to look for my photo shoot? For me, it's tidy, but not photo shoot perfect. I want my space to invite me in and feel at peace and comfortable. That's my target for my new post-house fire cottage. We're getting closer to putting it in practice.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Can't wait to hear how it looks when you're all moved in and everything's cool and fixed. And I know that living through a house fire is very traumatic. And we all have a traumatic response to that. That's a lot of loss when your whole living space goes up in smoke, right? It's a big deal. But I want you to take the moment as you move into this new house to say, okay, that was a traumatic experience. And the silver lining is we're moving into this cool new place that we never would have seen or thought of or conceived of if this hadn't happened. So yes, this event was terrifying and dramatic and awful. And one of the benefits that we got out of it is that we get to have this new living situation and this new life experience that was not in our plans and that was not on our radar. But won't it be interesting and fun and fabulous that we didn't anticipate?
CJ says, every time I start to feel good about making consistent progress, something happens to bring me back down to feeling shame. Someone comes over unexpectedly when everything's a mess, or someone close to me comments on all the organizing projects yet to be done without acknowledging all that I have already done.
That's not good, is it? That's not very much fun. I'm sorry. And I, again, shame is a feeling that is a reflection of other people's judgment, right? Like you're describing that people come over and go, oh, all these things aren't done yet. It's like, yeah, but look over here. Making yourself, they may or may not have the intent to be shaming you or to be making you feel shame, but it is really that reflection of how you hear them, how you think that they're judging you, whether they really intend it to be judgment or not. You hear it that way, and then you end up feeling shame. And so maybe you can recognize that when you're going to interact with other people, that potential exists, that they're not going to be super careful, or they're not going to be outwardly supportive, or they're not going to be doing a good job of reflecting back to you what you've done well. And know that that possibility is out there, and that you are just going to have to A, not take on their stuff, or B, spend some active time to counteract after you interact with them, so that you don't slide off the cliff and feel bad about it. It's like, yeah, but I'm still doing good. And isn't it a bummer that we don't have control about what other people say about us? And we have to do all the work to get our own emotions back in a even keel when someone does something that triggers us or makes us feel bad. So bummer. It's you know, they stomp around and say all the things that make you upset, and then they go out of your life and leave you there with the wreckage of how it feels. And then you have to do all this work to fix it. Sorry. That's sort of how life works, and it sucks. But I think what's important there is to notice that there's a link for you between somebody comes over to visit and then you feel bad again, and recognize that whenever that happens, you're just going to have to give yourself that little bit of extra self-care to recuperate from that and to not take on what they're dishing out. And hopefully come and listen to another podcast and let us help cheer you up about it. I'm certainly happy to do that.
I want to give the last word on this one to to Connie.
Okay.
International Woman of Mystery. Connie says, if someone comes over unexpectedly, I just say, you should have seen it 2 days ago, and let them wonder if it's better or worse now.
That's awesome. Let them wonder what you mean by that. What exactly do you mean by you should have seen it 2 days ago? That's hilarious. Well, and right, you know, perhaps you shouldn't come over unannounced.
Right. Okay, let's talk about next week.
Okay.
The topic is going to be time expectations, setting realistic time expectations specifically. We run into the problem all the time of people who have set aside the hour that they need to get their house organized, and it turns out that's not what it's going to take.
Surprise, surprise. That is an insufficient allotment of time to solve this problem. Yes. So
join us next week, Tuesday, June 27th at noon U.S. Central Time, for TikTok, set realistic time expectations for organizing projects.
Great. Can't wait to talk about that. That'll be fabulous.
Why don't you give us the weekly tittle?
Okay. This week's tittle is called Recite, Reflect, Reframe. This week's assignment is to spend time thinking about the language we use to talk about our lives and our stuff, with the goal of talking in a clearer, more thoughtful, and more supportive way. Recite is the first bullet point. What negative things do you casually or habitually say about or even to your stuff? Write down or record audio or video of a few words, phrases, or statements that you've heard yourself using around your house. Reflect is the next bullet point. Contemplate or meditate on what these expressions reveal about your thoughts, your feelings, or your beliefs about your home and your belongings. Are they honest? Are they exaggerated? Are they self-deprecating? Do they echo a negative emotion that someone else has expressed? Then reframe is the last bullet point. For each negative word or phrase on your list, write or dictate an affirmation or a positive sentiment as a counterpoint. For example, if you wrote, "I'm a disorganized person," you might replace that statement with, "I have a full, meaningful, active life, so sometimes I struggle with organization." That's a much more positive frame of mind than, "I'm a disorganized person," the end. So we want you to notice when you're making those comments and capture them, and then try to reframe them. And just think of it as a self-care exercise. This is you trying to support yourself, because we can't rely on everybody else in your life to come behind and go, "No, no, you're not disorganized. No, no, you're not messy. You're just working on a project." I'm going to do that, but I'm not in your life all day, every day. And so you have to do some of it for yourself. And we want you to use this tittle to try to do that a little bit and hopefully help you feel differently about it. And we will look forward to hearing about it next week.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or subscribe to our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you. So please send us your questions, comments, and topic suggestions on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me. Please go onto the Clutter Fairy Facebook page and see the pictures of Fred, the new puppy, the new golden retriever puppy, who is so adorable at my client's house. You will get a big hit of dopamine by looking at pictures of Fred. So go check him out, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.